Hello, and welcome to the live Printing Impressions webinar, One Tone, Many Possibilities, Meeting Needs and Exceeding Expectations with Monochrome Inkjet Platforms, sponsored by Ricoh. I'm Mark Michelson, Editor-in-Chief of Printing Impressions and the host of today's event. High-speed production inkjet print quality has been on the upswing for years, and print buyers and print providers have taken notice. While much of the excitement has centered around full-color production inkjet output advancements, the benefits inkjet technology provides for monochrome applications should not be overlooked. Operationally simpler than any other digital printing technology, more and more printers are making use of monochrome inkjet platforms to meet their customers' printing needs. Whether your output applications are marketing collateral, medical records, invoices, and much more, a high-speed monochrome inkjet device can get the job done quickly, efficiently, and with high fidelity, helping you to grow your business and profit margins. In this webinar, we have current users who will discuss the benefits that continuous feed monochrome inkjet platforms have provided their operations. Each will start out by providing a brief overview of their plant operations, and then we will move into a Q&A format discussion. We encourage questions from our listening audience, so please don't hesitate to submit your questions throughout this one-hour discussion. We will try to address them during the webinar and at the end, time permitting. But before we get started, let me take a second to point out the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with a wrench on it. If you missed the Tech Tips video we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click this widget for more information. Okay, so let's get started. Here today to discuss the advantages of monochrome production inkjet, we're honored to have Bob Kolva, Director of Data and Imaging Operation at Action Mailers. He is joined by Todd Petrikis, Director of Operations at Arvida plant in California. Our first speaker, Bob Kolva, has accumulated 30 years of printing experience. He began in direct mail estimating at an envelope manufacturer and progressed to a paper/printer buyer. Bob spent 6 years working for a large inline package mailer purchasing print and letter shop services. He has been with Action Mailers for the past decade, directing the data and print operations. Bob, what else can you tell us about Action Mailers and your role there?
Well, Action Mailers is a family-run organization. We've been in business since 1972. And we're in the Philadelphia area. We have more than 150 employees. We've grown our business substantially over the last several years, and we're focused primarily in servicing the nonprofit or solicitation for donation segment of the marketplace. We provide full services to our customers. We will go from composition all the way out into the mail for them. We have a variety of technologies that we employ here. We have inkjet addressing systems, as well as our high-speed continuous printing. We use GMC PrintNet software to do most of our composition. We are running OSE lasers, and we have the Ricoh MP5000 monochrome device. We have finishing capabilities that include two Hunkler standard cutting finishing lines. Our capabilities run between 800,000 and 1.2 million pieces of mail a day. And, you know, I'm very happy to be here.
Great. And so you say the nonprofit sector, which, so that's your primary focus, and obviously that's a very large industry, to say the least.
Yes. They do quite a bit of direct mail advertising.
Right. Okay. Our next panelist, Todd Petrikis, is the Director of Operations at Arvada's Valencia, California facility. Todd has more than 24 years' experience in printing, including customer service, pre-press, and facilities management. He started his career at Quad Graphics in Wisconsin and worked in pre-press and customer service for over 8 years before moving to Arvada, where he has held multiple roles over the past 18 years. Todd currently has responsibility for the print and operations supply chain at Arvada, including estimating and P&L management for the Valencia facility. Todd, what else can you tell us about your plant in particular and Arvada in general?
Oh, good morning or good afternoon, everyone. Arvato, and the facility that I'm working out of is in Valencia, California. And Arvato is part of Bertelsmann, which is an international media company worldwide. And our division, which, as I mentioned, is the Arvato Group, is we specialize in the healthcare marketing and healthcare materials in the Valencia facility. And the services offered around that is everything from e-commerce to presentment and delivery of bound printed matter and all the manufacturing and fulfillment services that go along with those processes. The Valencia facility is specializing in that, as Arvato as a whole is into different verticals and different markets, from call centers to financial clearing in different facilities across the country. We have numerous print and distribution facilities, and as I mentioned, I'm calling today from the Valencia facility on the West Coast. And in that facility, we're focused heavily on digital print and fulfillment and assembly of healthcare, mostly bound printed matter and printed materials. Our print facility, we call the Media Factory, is made up of some OSE continuous print lines, all set up in duplex, and the numerous OSE cut sheet printers. We've also just added third quarter of this year a Ricoh MP5000 that we're integrating and getting up to speed in our world, and some OSE cut sheet color equipment as well, mostly sheet fed cut sheet color, of course. And then, as I mentioned, bound printed matter for the vast majority of product we're doing. So we have various perfect binding and saddle stitching equipment on site, heavily focused on on-demand production, shorter runs, variable sizes and quantities, and then laminating and die cutting, as well as the post, and then the post-production side of it, as I referred to after it's bound, is where some multi-pocket intelligent insertion equipment, polybagging, and shrink wrapping, different finishing options there. And then servicing that supply chain, the healthcare supply chain in Valencia, and one or two other facilities across the country, we're also offering, as I mentioned, e-delivery, presentment solutions, some call center business process outsourcing options. So we're a little bit different in that we're not necessarily a printer, but we're really a supply chain management group that offers printing as one of the services.
Okay, and I assume that a lot of those healthcare packets are highly personalized, obviously.
Yeah, the vast majority of the product we are doing, even though it is bound printed matter, is personalized to some extent. If it's not to the end user, then it's personalized to, say, the company, if you will. So, again, all shorter run product for the most part.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move to some questions about your operations. Started off. Why did you both have installed the monochrome Ricoh presses. Why did you choose these monochrome inkjet presses you acquired versus, say, a digital toner alternative that might have been available? Bob, you want to tackle that one first?
Sure. We made the decision to go with the MP5000 based on the speed primarily, and then the size of the machine itself, the footprint, and the consumables cost looked like the biggest deals for us. It doesn't generate a lot of waste, and it's got a very simple operator panel, so it put us in a place where we weren't offering something to our facility that was totally different than what we were already doing.
Todd, did you... Was it pretty much the same factors that led you down that path, or was it some other considerations?
I'll say similar in a lot of the areas. For us, we're heavily monochrome-based for our market and the work that we're and the customers that we're servicing. And when looking to really increase the throughput in a given footprint for us, we evaluated the different options out there, and inkjet made the most sense because the speeds that we could achieve as well as fitting within our requirements for a certain footprint within our facility, really was the most beneficial to us. And then when you look at the cost per impression, and the quality that we feel we can get out of this versus some of the toner boxes that we have on site, it made the most sense given our work mix and our facility requirements. We were actually able to increase the throughput and the productivity quite a bit within the same footprint, which was hugely beneficial given the nature of our business is very, very cyclical and very, very high peak period in fourth quarter this time of the year. So looking to maximize every square foot we can.
Right. Hey, you guys both mentioned the footprint factor, and I guess, that's something that I guess not being in a plan myself, it's not something I give that much thought to, but I guess it really is an important consideration because, workflow, everything is about workflow, and if you've got to all of a sudden then move a bunch of equipment around to accommodate a new machine, I guess that can really be very disruptive to your operations.
Yeah, it can be, and what we also found was that we don't necessarily have enough space to expand every time we need to incorporate a new equipment set. So being able to do a one-to-one replacement, is very beneficial for us.
Yeah, and for us too, looking at the different opportunities that were out there for Inkjet, the Ricoh unit did have what I would consider the smallest footprint, given its throughput. So there was less external pieces that had to be involved in the process, and again, really, really helped us to increase that productivity in the same size space without, reinventing the workflow within the facility.
Right. There's so much attention that's been given on the color side of high-speed production inkjet. But from your perspective, why do you think a printer should also look at the advantages that monochrome inkjet technology provides? It may not be quite as sexy, but it obviously is an important part of your operations. Todd, why do you think the monochrome inkjet, deserved investment from Arvato's standpoint?
From our perspective, it was our color work is not at a point or a level that would make sense for us to think about investing in that. Our clients have not, shown the interest or had the need for color output at the high levels or high throughput that we'd be looking at with inkjet. In addition, I've talked to quite a few other users out there who do have color boxes, and it seems after a while, I get the impression that quite a few are really utilizing those color boxes to quite an extent with black and white work as well because they may not have enough color volume to fill them up. So that's, from our perspective, just the black and white was really the only opportunity for us. And looking at the offerings out there, the Ricoh unit made the most sense from it was a black and white only unit and then allowing us to go to color down the road if we saw that need. So it would offer a lot of flexibility in that aspect.
All right. How about in your case, Bob?
Well, what we knew is that we had work for a monochrome device. We knew that there wasn't a speculative quality to installing that piece of equipment. And to be able to increase our throughput on our current work and also reduce the cost of the throughput was a major factor in our decision.
Okay. One of our listeners had asked a question of wanted to know what speeds you guys are running your MP5000s at. Bob, I think you might have said that in your opening, but could you just clarify that?
Yes, it was on one of my opening slides. We run it pretty much all day, every day, at the 420 feet per minute. We do have a couple of substrates that require us to go down to 210 feet a minute, but once we're done with that product, we move right back up and go back to the maximum speed again.
How many shifts are you guys running?
We run 24 hours a day during the Monday through Thursday part of the week, and then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday we run 12-hour shifts.
Okay. How about in your case, Todd? What kind of speeds are you running in your press at?
I would echo Bob's statements there. We're running at the 420 feet per minute as well. We have not slowed the press down at this point. We've moved across a lot of different substrates on paper and haven't ran anything coated or anything like that where you might think about slowing it down. But we've been, fortunate enough to be able to to keep it at 420 feet per minute consistently.
Now, is your finishing operations tied in with it? Are you guys in line or near line, offline? Todd, how is your finishing set up?
We are set up across all of our continuous lines, the toner as well as the inkjet boxes. We are set up with roll to cut for the entire workflow. So we are not going roll to roll at all. So all the finishing is near line in our facility.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, you guys are strictly roll to roll, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, we do some still box-to-box work, but on the inkjet itself, yes, we are strictly roll-to-roll.
Okay. Say, you know, there's a fellow printer out there looking to possibly acquire a monochrome inkjet press. You know, having the fact that you guys have both been down that road, Bob, what advice would you give somebody in terms of the initial considerations they should be looking at in terms of, you know, deciding A, to buy a press in the first place, and B, you know, as to which vendor to partner with?
Well, as far as the device itself is concerned, I would advise them to first take a look at their business and what, you know, what products they expect to run on an inkjet. Get some samples if it's at all possible, and make sure that, you know, the product that you're planning to generate is a product that's going to be acceptable to your customer. The next thing that I would consider is, you know, the availability of paper. You want to make sure that the paper that you're doing your samples on is actually available in your area. And you know, I think the one of the other considerations, you know, I don't know that you necessarily want to talk to your customers about the inkjet specifically, but you may want to gauge their flexibility as far as what the image looks like, because sometimes they do look different, and it's a lot easier to handle that on the front end than it is on the back end.
Todd, how about from the road that you've traveled, What advice would you give in terms of both vendor selection as well as things to think about as to whether an inkjet monochrome device even makes sense for your operation?
I would advise them really take a close look at your workflow and your volume, because it's things that we've learned, it's a bit different, and we're still getting into this. We've only had it on the floor for 3 months, but still getting an understanding of what, and I shouldn't say not what, but how to run it in the best, most efficient workflow, in that if you have, I think, an operation where you're required to maybe potentially start up and stop multiple times a day, or your work tends to lead you in that type of path, it takes some evaluation as well, because you're looking at the heads retracting and the paper, the waste and process and the processing time associated with that. Really making sure you're able to set up your workflow to where you can get all that work queued up and, you know, ready to run for the day, or that portion of the day, if you will. And that, to me, I think was a bit, I won't say a surprise, but it's a little bit different for us and how we've ran our facility in the past. But as far as, you know, the vendor as well, I got to go back to my comment earlier and making sure that I think your work mix fits the device you're looking at. Meaning if you're looking at a monochrome only, or a color device, you know, we did the research for a few years and then had to quickly execute within, say, the last 6 months due to some production requirements. But looking in the past, you know, we didn't have work mix that fit very well to a full color device. So I think it's, you know, you have to have that understanding of where you see your business going and where you see your work mix moving, if it makes sense to get a device that can be upgraded to color down the road, or just, you know, make that investment. Because the barrier to entry on that is obviously much higher, but make that investment up front and, you know, bank on, to some extent, the work will come for the color side or not. I think it's all
right.
Part of that, obviously, the total cost of ownership and, you know, really being honest with yourself and where you see your business going and what your work mix is going to look like.
One of our listeners was curious if, from your perspective, the print quality coming off your inkjet is the same as what you would see off your toner systems. Bob, do you have any opinions on that one?
Sure. By and large, our clients haven't noticed a difference. I mean, we've had a couple that we've actually had to call it out and show it to them on samples for them to see the difference. I've noticed that, you know, there's some advantages with the inkjet that you don't have with the toner-based system. The adjustment of density to match, you know, because we print on pre-printed shells. So to match the black that was pre-printed, we have an ability to go in and to make some really, you know, quick and easy adjustments in order to lay down more ink or less ink as it's necessary. With fonts and line copy, there's not that much of a difference at all. You know, it's when you get into the images that there's a little bit of preparation work that has to happen, and some images just don't lend themselves that well to inkjet production.
Todd, how about it from your perspective?
Around the, you know, the text and line art, I definitely echo Bob's sentiments there. We've seen an improvement in the quality. I think this is obviously very subjective, but improvement in the quality when it comes, especially to, you know, bleed tabs and large areas. If you have a large bleed tab on the face of a book, or tint patterns in the background, where it's much, I think, more consistent and easier to hold that than it has been on the toner for us. With half tones, you know, we're I think still getting our feet wet on the half tone side. We've seen situations where the halftones are a little bit better quality than we've seen on some of the continuous, I'll say continuous toner boxes, obviously not cut sheet, but on continuous in our opinion. And then we've seen certain situations where it's tough to get to the same level that we saw with the toner boxes. And it kind of goes back to the workflow side of it and how the data is prepared. And as Bob mentioned, in certain situations we're seeing that images, halftones or images that are prepared, in certain cases black and white, tend to print better or grayscale than they do if they're prepared color. But in other scenarios, we found that color is working better. So I think I've chalked that up to part of our learning curve as well, as we're still working through that, what is the best mix and the best actual format to yield the highest quality results when it comes to the halftones.
Now, Todd, I know you mentioned that you've only been at this now, like, I think about 3 months, but were there any surprises that you've encountered as you've been ramping up your new monochrome Ricoh?
And honestly, what I just mentioned as far as the halftones and working through the different formats and the different types of output quality we're seeing on some of the halftones, I think was, the only surprise. I think we were very well prepared through the research that we did, as well as, you know, working with Ricoh, they did a good job at getting us prepared and helping to understand some changes that may be required or would be required in the workflow once we got the line up. And then we've been working diligently at moving the existing processes over to that. But I'm actually happy to say there have not been any big surprises that set us back. I think, in all honesty, maybe I would say the biggest surprise is that how quickly we've been able to migrate existing business over to the monochrome side. I'm guessing, I don't have the experience, but I'm guessing that that's not the same scenario when you're going full color. I've heard a lot of conversations around that. But the monochrome movement and migration from toner to inkjet, I think for us went well, very well, I think a little bit better than anticipated.
Mm-hmm. How about with you, Bob, at Action Mailers? Were there some surprises that you encountered as you were ramping up the press?
Well, you know, pretty much the same as Todd experienced. We were a little bit surprised by how some of our images reacted. You know, things that we had prepared, for the toner boxes responded a little bit differently, and some of them better, and a couple of them not so much. One of the things that really did surprise us was the variability of the density of the ink. I'd spoken about that earlier. We didn't realize how, you know, wide a gamut, you know, we could go just on the monochrome with the density of the ink. One of the pleasant surprises was the operator controls and how well our operators adopted to it. You know, we've we got up to our target much sooner than we thought we would as far as feed through the machine each month, and we were really, really pleasantly surprised about that.
Another question that came in, Todd, maybe you can try to tackle this one. The listener was curious to see if you're expecting to maintain both your continuous inkjet and toner devices, and do you think that there may be a day that that your inkjet devices, maybe not what you have yet, but what you may install in the future, could completely replace your continuous feed toner devices?
Well, that's a great question. Yes, right now we definitely are planning on and maintaining the both platforms, the toner and inkjet. The toner lines have been there for a time, and we have a lot of experience and know the lines very well. But down the road, I mean, I could envision in a time down the road that we would be all inkjet on the continuous side. You know, and I'm going to go back to a little earlier, one of the advantages I would see with that, obviously, the cost of ownership, but the footprint, I'm going to go back to that, and I would be able to, I think, create a larger yield or a higher yield with potentially a smaller footprint. This is giving me additional room to bring in additional finishing equipment wherever the needs may arise for our business at the time.
Hmm. Bob, is your perspective pretty much the same on that? Or
no, unfortunately, you know, because we take in a lot of client-supplied materials, I don't know that we're ever going to be able to go 100% inkjet. There's just there are substrates that just don't lend themselves to it, and then there's the oddities that we produce, like labels or clean release cards that are just not meant for the inkjet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can see our volumes going to the 65-35 side of the inkjet, but I don't know that our goal is to go any further than that.
Mm-hmm. Bob, another question that came in that I think kind of pertains to you, it was the listener wanted to know, in the roll-to-roll production, is there any requirement for pre-converted rolls, for example, perfed or punch or marginal sensor marks? I guess I don't totally understand what that person's asking, but maybe I'm not as technical. Do you understand what the question is?
Yeah, I believe I do. The perforation specifically, we like to run them, you know, facing away from the print heads whenever it's possible. We haven't had any real issues with them being taller than the clearance between the paper surface and the print head. I could see where that might be a problem if something was heavily punched. We run, like I said, probably 90 to 95% customer supplied items, and we have very little control over their quality. And we've not hesitated very often to run something through the inkjet. It's been very responsive to it. We've had some tensile strength issues because it's a tight web system with some really bad paper, but we haven't had any issues with punches or perforations.
Okay. Skip that one. We've already kind of covered that a little bit. Talking limitations, obviously one of the areas with inkjet where I think a lot of the paper manufacturers have been in catch-up mode is paper stocks that can be run on the presses. Todd, have you, even though you've only been running your press for a short time, have you had any limitations on what paper stocks you're able to run and how have you overcome those, if any?
Yeah, that for us, everything that we're running currently is an uncoated sheet. We are in the process yet of, I'll say, trying to find a house sheet that we're satisfied with. We've been utilizing our existing sheet from the toner base boxes, and we're really not content with the level of opacity and what we're seeing on that as final output. So we've tested four or five various rolls from different manufacturers in the same market or the same type of sheet, and we're making a little bit of headway, but I think right now that is one of our ongoing challenges, is trying to find a sheet that really fits the niche of the healthcare market, and delivering on the total cost that we need for that product. One of the challenges given the healthcare world that we're dealing with is we deal with some Medicare, Medicaid, or product, and that requires typically larger fonts, some bolder typefaces, and there's been some opacity challenges when you get into that with the sheets that we've been running. And again, that's really where we're trying to work through right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you see more potential demand from the healthcare providers where they would want that type of information on a coded sheet, or is it still uncoded?
Yeah, I think in the healthcare market and the space that we're in, I wouldn't see that migrating that way. Depending on how low paper costs may go or product prices, but the pre-enrollment side, the sales side of the process for healthcare, potentially down the road, but I still would tend to say that it would stick with an uncoded sheet.
Right. How about at Action Mailers, Bob, in terms of your papers run, and are you encountering any limitations?
We've had a couple of learning experiences with some products that looked heavily calendared but turned out to be coded. One of the things that we have found, though, is that, you know, by reducing speed, making some heat adjustments and some concessions as far as the amount of ink we're laying down, a couple of the coded stocks that we've run actually produce a higher quality image. You know, one of the comments that Todd made earlier about how even it is or how easy it is to maintain an even flow when you're doing block solids or screens of that nature, you know, it really shows up when you're running on a highly calendared stock.
Mm-hmm. Another question that came in was regarding pre-treated paper, and this listener wanted to know, is the additional cost worth the increased quality output, or is non-treated usually preferred due to the cost advantages? Either you guys got some thoughts on that one?
I think that all that I would add to that, this is Todd, is that that's actually what we're looking at right now. The sheet we've been running is an untreated or plain sheet, and we are now testing with various treated sheets from the different manufacturers, and we're seeing on the uncoated 50-pound, we're seeing slight improvements on the treated sheet. Unfortunately, we're still in the process of working through that, so about all I could add on that side.
Right. Bob, any opinions on that one?
Just that we, when we were taking a look at it, one of the things that we were considering is, you know, what is it that we're going to be printing on the paper? You know, the treated sheet will probably lend itself to a higher quality halftone. Some of your really, really small fine line work, things of that nature, would certainly benefit from being on the treated sheet. If it's just letter copy, you know, if it's just straight, you know, line copy with text, I haven't, you know, experienced any issues with an untreated sheet. That's as far as you know, some of the wicking or other image quality issues that could develop. So I think, you know, the bottom line on that is that you have to decide, you know, what the quality need level needs to be for your product, and then go after that paper accordingly.
How about the basis weight limitations? Is there somebody wanted to know if there was a lower limit in terms of the basis weight stocks you can run? Anybody got an answer to that one?
No, I haven't. This is Bob. I haven't tested the lower end limits yet. Most of the things that we run come in as a 60-pound. We do periodically get a hybrid type of 55-pound in, but we don't really run any stocks lighter than that.
Okay. How about your case, Todd?
We haven't either. We've been strictly testing the 50-pound at this point.
Okay. You guys both mentioned in some of your earlier comments one of the advantages is total cost of ownership. And, you know, obviously we don't want you to give away any proprietary data in terms of, you know, your specific operations. But in just general terms, I mean, we've covered a little bit here the paper costs, but how about the ink costs of, you know, running on an inkjet press versus a toner equivalent for a continuous feed? Do you have any comments on that one, Todd?
Working through that at this point and that analysis, different clients and different product is requiring, as Bob touched earlier, to different ink densities versus the toner side as well. And the paper, of course, has another variable in that process for us as well, determining what we have to do with the laydown and the amount of coverage that we have. I don't know how specific I can get or detailed I can get on that because, it's again, for us, it's still a work in progress on doing that.
Somebody wanted to know what types of inks are you guys running dye or pigment based inks?
We're running dye based.
At
Action.
So you both are. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, how about you from an ink cost standpoint?
We're finding it to be comparable to toner. A lot of what we ran early on was at a much lighter density than where we are currently. We had some concerns initially about, you know, potentially bleeding through or, you know, some of the other, you know, initial issues that you have. Then we found that just not to be the case, that we could run a nice, you know, rich black color and we could, you know, simulate the toner environment as much as possible. Our costs, you know, they're not exactly one-to-one comparable, but they're close enough that they've not been an issue.
I know we've kind of touched on the paper issue a little bit earlier, but any additional comments on your paper costs versus the paper costs for an equivalent toner press?
Well, Todd had started to say, you know, about the spoilage on the smaller quantities. We're noticing that as well, that you need a little bit more paper than you would on a toner machine if you're going to run a smaller quantity. But when you're measuring your quantity in numbers of rolls, I don't see, you know, any additional usage. Actually, you know, when we get projects that are into the 4, 5, 6 roll range, we're noticing that the spoilage evens out and actually becomes a little bit less because, you know, we don't purchase a lot of our paper. It's supplied. I don't have a real eye on what the actual hard costs are, but I can tell you that our spoilage, you know, we have to pay attention to not put, you know, half roll or single roll projects up on the inkjet because there's an additional paper cost involved there to getting the project started.
How about in your case, Todd, even though you haven't been running the machine very long?
I guess moving more towards just the cost side and the sheets that we're evaluating, the treated sheets, we're seeing, I'll say on average, maybe a 10% upcharge or so, 10-12% upcharge for the treatment on the sheet versus an untreated sheet. So that's something that, of course, you have to weigh out if it's worth that increase for the quality that you're going to see. The quality, potential quality increase on the treated versus untreated sheet. And as Bob mentioned, depending on what type of product you're running, it may or may not pay off. On the waste side of that, haven't tracked it closely yet, but I think we've seen just a potentially a little higher waste than we have with the toner boxes, and I would attribute that to our learning curve internally and learning how to run the press and how to queue up jobs and working through some of the image quality adjustments that we're needing to make. So we're going up and down more than we would once we get the workflows fine-tuned.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys see that down the road as more and more paper and even maybe even ink options become available on the market and there's perhaps more competition, that those consumables costs will drop? drop for the inkjet side?
We certainly hope so.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's usually supplying the laws of supply and demand.
I think we're seeing a lot more sheets become available. I mean, I know we're testing a few as well that are literally just coming out,
right,
as we speak right now. And there always seem, just for the short time we've been in this mode of evaluating different sheets only in the 50-pound segment, you know, there's been two or three new products that have come that I can think of already that are coming and that we're having test rolls being sent in. So I would think as well through that, the amount of sheets available and the other opportunities that are going to be out there, it's only going to increase, and hopefully will help work and drive that cost down, as you mentioned, through supply and demand.
Mm-hmm. Todd, you mentioned workflow before I interrupted you with a question. How has the installation of the 5,000, how has that impacted your production workflow? I assume one area has been on the pre-press side of it, but maybe you can comment on that.
We're feeding everything into our continuous lines, whether they're the toner or the inkjet line, through an AFP workflow. Mm-hmm. for all data streams, and the adjustment to that has been, again, I won't say a big deal, but it's been one of the things that we've had to work on and changing that and how the data is fed and what the Rico likes versus what the toner-based machines that we have inside like. It's a little bit different when it comes to image handling and things. But of course, you know, all related to workflow as well as the productivity. You know, when we've had the times where the clients are, the volume is heavy volume of say a fixed client. I guess similar. I'm assuming to Bob's workflow, and you know, the yields and the productivity are fantastic that we're seeing out of the line. When it comes into those workflows and you're not having a lot of smaller runs across the board, you're able to open it up and let it run. It can yield some fantastic productivity and throughput.
Bob, how did the inkjet device impact your workflow operations?
For the most part, we've been able to maintain the same workflow. Image preparation on the front end has become a little different, and we have to sometimes make a decision earlier than we used to about how we're going to produce a project so that we can commit to the proper DPI on our images as we're starting up on our preparation. One of the things that it's done for the rest of our building, I know that our bindery operations, the cutting and the folding, really appreciate the inkjet product. You know, they all feel that, you know, they're getting a cleaner product, that they're getting something that's more conducive to their uptime. So, you know, the other departments have been very much appreciative of that.
And you guys both converted to Rico's front end system from your previous Canon front ends?
Yes, that's correct. I've switched over to the Process Director product.
Right. Okay. And that was the case with you guys as well, Todd?
Yes, we're using Process Director.
Okay.
Well.
Okay. You know, let's move over to kind of press operator skill requirements. Have you seen any difference in the skill levels for what would be required from an operational standpoint for someone running a toner press in your plant versus, say, your new inkjet press? Bob, you want to comment
sure.
on that one?
We're letting our lead operators, or our best, you know, our most skilled operators, use the inkjet device. What we've seen there is that, you know, they already possessed an attention to detail and the ability to follow the steps that are necessary to be successful with that piece of equipment. One of the things that we're starting to see now is that the other operators are just as interested in the product or in working with the machine. It was a little intimidating when it first landed on the floor, simply because of its size and the involvement to get the machine started, but now that you know, everybody's had the opportunity to see it run, to see the volumes that it's able to generate, and, you know, we have more guys that want in on it at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would assume some of them see the future, and if that's going to be a strong part of the future of our industry, they want to be up to speed on running those, being able to run those machines. Todd, how about from your standpoint, have you seen any difference in operator skill requirements or pretty much?
At this point, we've taken all of our continuous operators and trained them on the RICO as part of their area of responsibility. And as I mentioned, we're configured roll to cut. So for us, I think the most challenging part of the process is the cut. The press has been, I think, a challenging. I don't mean that it's changed with inkjet. It's been the same as it is with toner. But from the press side, our operators, I think, have made the transition very, very well. The only difference that I can think of to call out is that, you know, the ink adjustments and the ink settings, we're a little more particular with them and how they modify those settings and what we allow them to do with doing adjustments without having the input of their supervisors to go and do that. We've had some few occasions where they just feel it's better to run it and bump it up, but we, of course, from the TCO side, don't see that as a good idea.
Right.
And that's been, you know, I would say the only, I wouldn't even say major, but adjustment that we've had to kind of work through with managing that part of the business. But technically, there on our side, there hasn't been, I'm happy to say, there's no intimidation or apprehension about it. You know, it's a different manufacturer for us than we've had in here in the past, that's created a little bit of apprehension. But once they got into it and got the training and were walked through it, I think we've moved past that now, and I think the comfort level is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare the downtime and the maintenance on the new RICO press versus your toner machines? Would you say it's equivalent or?
Well, for us at Action Mailers, we've noticed the uptime on the equipment itself is incredible. We most of our downtime issues are self-inflicted learning process kind of items. And you know, we've had, I don't know, maybe we're running at 6-to-1 service calls against the toner boxes. You know, we get 6 toner box service calls to 1 inkjet service call. We don't.
That's because they're older machines, or is it the technology?
Well, a portion of it is because of the age of the equipment, I have to admit. Another portion of it is because of the technology itself. There are less user serviceable parts, I believe, on a toner-based system than there is on the inkjet. And there's many, many more moving parts. So, you know, from that standpoint, I've seen, you know, we get an incredible amount of throughput when we have high-volume jobs running. And because it's mount the roll, run the roll, take the roll off. You know, the inkjet does a very good job of continuing to run when you have it up and running.
Right. How about from your standpoint, Todd? What are you guys seeing on the maintenance downtime comparison standpoint?
I think given the few months that we've had it up and running, in the beginning we've had a few installation items to work through, which, again, same with any installation that's going on. So I wouldn't contribute that, and it would be fair to compare that. But I think once you've been up and running, as Bob mentioned, you know, it seems dramatically less at this point, and that I'm not sure if the ratio would be as high for us, but, you know, the amount of time and downtime, the only thing we've had really come up is once in a while you'll have a head issue or a head adjustment that has to be made or a head that may have went bad, and that's, I think part of those might be just through the part of us for us the installation and working through the of getting the machine up and running. You know, once we pass that, it's few and far between. You know, sometimes I think the team just stops in to see how we're doing to make sure we're still alive.
Right.
But it runs very well and very strong. I think that just to the fact as well, there are far less moving parts and items that can go wrong, I think, in the process.
You mentioned the head issues, which I think one of the big surprises from what I've heard with Inkjet is that the head life is actually much longer than, and maybe this might apply to color a little more, but the head life is much longer than some people and maybe even some of the manufacturers themselves had originally predicted. Do you find that to be the case, Bob?
Yes, we've got some outstanding head life from the center of the web heads, the ones that aren't affected as much by inconsistencies in the paper. We have 40 heads installed, and possibly 2/3 of them are still the originals, you know, after a year. Mm-hmm. So we're doing pretty well that way.
Somebody had sent in a question. What printing or production challenges require you to slow down the press to achieve the results you want? Bob, is that something that comes into a play at Action Mailers?
Yes. We have a handful of products that we know going into it that we're going to have to slow it down. They're coded products, and they have a lot of imaging in a small area, so that there's not enough room for the ink itself to dry before it gets to the next image area. And in those cases, you know, we do have to slow it down. We've noticed with some of the big block solids, we have one client that runs almost a full 1-inch bar 18 inches across the web. And when we do that, you know, depending on how porous the paper is at that particular time, we'll have to slow that product down too. But you know, other than that, as long as the edges are clean, you know, we run everything we can at the highest speed.
Todd, how about in your case? I know you haven't had the machine running that long, but
yeah, we haven't had any I'll say print quality items that we've had to slow the machine down for. We have had a few occasions that we've had to chase with images and the format of the images where it made sense to slow the machine down for testing purposes to work through that. But for the most part, for the short time we're up and up, we've been running it at 420 feet per minute.
Right. A few people had asked, what's the largest paper size that you guys can run on your MP5000s?
I believe the width is 20 and a half inches with a print area of, say, 19.8 or 19.9, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We've run 20 inch through it and haven't had any real issues with it.
Okay. Let's just move to maybe just a few general questions here, maybe not inkjet specific, but you know, how do you see your printing operations evolving over the next couple of years? I know that's kind of a potentially vague question, but Bob, do you have any comments on how you see Action Mailers evolving?
Well, one of the things that we're experiencing slightly now, but we're seeing it as a trend, is incredibly compressed schedules.
Mm-hmm.
Where you know the big deal for us right now is to get the first roll off the press and get it into the rest of the facility so that everyone else can get started. We're seeing a lot more of our clients coming to us and saying, you know, we can't get this product to you on time. Can you still maintain our schedule? Or we know that we're not going to be able to deliver these things until, you know, such and such a date. Are you going to be able to help us out at all? We take a little pride in that. It's one of the things that set us, you know, apart in the industry. And I see more of that happening rather than less. It could very well develop into, the need for color, cutting out that, the lead time on waiting for forms and delivering forms and then getting started on the monochrome portion of it. So, I can see our printing operations going to color over the next few years.
Todd, how about in your case? How do you see the Valencia plant evolving and maybe the Arvado's print operations in general?
I would agree with Bob as well on the turn time and the service levels. The service levels have been, getting closer and tighter and tighter as time goes on, and I think that definitely has been part of our need and requirement to increase capacity and increase the throughput. So what we can get out in the same 8-hour time frame has increased, of course, due to that. And I only see that you can only go so far, of course, to same day or 24-hour turns. But for us, evolving as well, hopefully down the road, is in adding that additional line or additional capacity to increase the throughput on the footprint that we have, and being able to meet our customers' needs and the large, I think, variation in what's going on with the clients as far as the unpredictability, especially in the healthcare vertical that we're in, to what you're going to see day to day. In our world, we don't have a good forecast a lot of times of what's going to be coming in tomorrow or the next week. It's just kind of a high level. In the next month or two, you could see this much. Now, that volume could come in one day or could come in over 30 days, but the service levels have to be able to be maintained. So for us, evolving and improving the process to allow us to keep the same service levels to some extent regardless of the workflow or the volume, the work volume we're seeing, is critical. I think further and further automation and the more we can do for the whole supply chain to help in that process is really key for us.
Right. Todd, I guess along those same lines, as we're seeing a shift toward digital communications, how do you see that impacting the healthcare side of your business?
I think that's a whole other webinar.
Yes, I think so.
We do support that today. So, many of our clients are distributing, work through e-presentment as well as through print. Of course, there's opting in and opting out of communications, and different clients will take a different approach. Some will opt everyone in, and you can electronically opt out, and others will go the opposite way. So depending upon the requirements of that type of business, if you will. So we've definitely have to support.
So there are no mandates per se, because, to say.
I think it's certain. Depending on the market served, I think there are mandates, and potentially by state, even those mandates can change in the healthcare world. So, we have been supporting e-distribution as well as the printed side, and we've seen some shifts, definitely shifts, over the last couple of years here with the way things are going and how everyone is handling that process.
Mm-hmm. This may be a topic for another webinar as well, but Todd, is Obamacare, is that having any impact on the types of materials, or do you see that having impact on your operations?
It has. It definitely has for us. What it's done, I think it's increased the amount of digital print, or print, I should say, that's happened with healthcare, due to the fact that more people, a larger group or client base, for the most part, I think have to be enrolled in healthcare, have to have some sort of coverage, and some of the base may not necessarily have the need or access to e-distribution, or the product may be mandated that it has to be in print as well. So we have seen a definite increase in volume due to Obamacare. So for us, it's been a positive side to the print side of the business.
Right. And Bob, real quickly, I mean, you guys are in the direct mail segment, which has actually held up pretty strong in the shift toward digital communications. How do you see the digital world impacting you guys?
I think that there's been some positives for us. There's been some opportunities where people are taking their print media and using it to drive folks towards their digital media. I see and some of the better marketers seem to be using both hand in hand. It's go to this website and request this information and we'll send it to you. And we've benefited greatly from some of those situations, as well as, you know, here we've dropped this letter out for you just so that you can get all of our web information and go take a look at things at your leisure. So I don't know that it's had the big predicted impact. And you can see some projects die off and then other projects get created. Some of the volumes go down because they're getting much more targeted lists. But by and large, I don't think it's had the impact that everyone thought it would.
Right. Well, unfortunately, it looks like we've just about run out of time. So I'd like to thank everyone for their time today. On behalf of Printing Impressions and Rico, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you would just take a minute to fill out a brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, we would be most grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring you in the future. I hope to see you at the next Printing Impressions webinar, and thanks so much to Todd and Bob for their wonderful comments today and for their participation and for sharing with the industry. Everyone, have a great day.